WOWDLP Tacoma Park.
Good morning. Artist Experience is an hour-long radio show dedicated to looking at art. We hope that Tom and I can introduce our listeners to what we've been looking at and help you when you visit the exhibit, creating your soul, in your experience, your own work of art. The Artist Experience radio program has a unique mission. We look into the inward experiences of engagement with art, and we desire to make them explicit, both in the creator and in you, our listeners.
You want to play with me? Okay. We play Little Sally Walker, we play Jabbo, and we play Go Down the Wall. Little Sally Walker, send in the saucer, rise, Sally, rise. Wipe your weeping eyes and put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip. I'll shake you to the east, I'll shake you to the west, I'll shake you to the one that you love the best. Jabbo walk and Jabbo talk, Jabbo heater with a knife and a fork. Jabbo man, hey, 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 hey. Jabbo to walk and Jabbo talk, Jabbo heater with a knife and a fork. Now Jabbo boy was a lying man, hey, 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 hey.
Good morning. This is Sheila Blake. This is our Artist Experience radio show. Tom Zanakis, my radio partner, is really sick, or he would certainly be here. But luckily, my husband Peter Blake is going to be filling in for Tom, so it should all be fine. I want to tell you that we have an Artist Experience page on Facebook where we put images of the things we're talking about, and we encourage you, please, to go to our Facebook page. And it's a place where you can look at what we're talking about. And also, if you give us ideas or feedback, we love it. So look at it while you're listening. And you can also stream the program at TacomaRadio.org.
Sheila and I will talk today about the work of a great American artist, Bill Traylor, who can currently be seen at the exhibit entitled Between Worlds, The Art of Bill Traylor at the Smithsonian American Art Museum on 8th and F Streets, a block from a Gallery Place Metro in D.C. This is another one of those great free museums that we have in D.C. Tom was really excited about this show since he has researched the depth of outsider, outliner, primitive, and folk art from the American South for years. Tom is sick today. Get better soon, Tom, and I'm filling in for him. Tom titled the program Honest Risk, due to how honest, brave, and risky this artist was in making beautiful art with this simple visual language. He was born into slavery in Alabama, and he was an eyewitness to so many things that were happening in the American South. As Tom and Sheila were walking through the exhibit, Tom said he was a true art martyr, using the meaning of the ancient Greek word martyr, which means witness. Bill Traylor was a witness of many things in his long life from 1853 to 1949, and he candidly, economically, and beautifully recorded what he saw in the most honest and observational way. The other dimension of this work is the immediacy and intuitive nature of the expression. This is sheer, natural, guttural making. Nothing is forced. It's as honest as it can be. Sheila, what were some of the things he witnessed in his long life?
Well, Bill Traylor was born in 1853 in Alabama. The slaves were emancipated in 1865, so he was 12 years old. But in the Jim Crow South, where would he go? So Traylor stayed in rural Alabama, working as a sharecropper on a cotton plantation his whole life. But as he got older, into his 50s, his white people died and his children scattered, so he moved to Montgomery. He worked in a shoe factory and lived in a room and finally a shack, but he had rheumatism that prevented him from continuing to work. After that, he got a small stipend of public assistance, but he was homeless and he slept in the back room of stores and in the back room of the Ross Clayton Funeral Home. But he was at the center of the vibrant African-American community. And in June 1939, when he was 85 years old, he set up a little table in a corner in front of his store and began his artistic adventure. He began to make a visual record of everything he'd noticed, everything he'd seen. He hung some string and pins his drawings up so that people passing by could see them. One of those people, Charles Shannon, who was a young white artist, noticed Trailer and his developing talent. And it became clear to Shannon that the work was becoming stronger. His shapes and rhythms were more assertive. Shannon stopped by every day and began to supply Trailer with poster paints, brushes, and drawing paper, and they became friends. Trailer drew on everything, cardboard boxes he tore apart, posters, anything he could draw on, what the museum people call supports. But they were just scraps of cardboard, often with the tape or printing he would incorporate into his compositions. Trailer had two or three wives and, he says, 20-odd children. And from 1942 to 1945, he lived with his children and other relatives in Detroit, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. He had to have his leg amputated because of gangrene, so he went back to Montgomery to live with his daughter, Sally. He died in 1949 and was buried there.
During the viewing of this large exhibition of about 155 works, Sheila wondered, what is this need for someone to express their life, the expression that reveals so much about a person and the times around him? Bill Trailer was making art outside on a little table on the street where people could watch him paint. Most artists are very private in their work, but Bill Trailer painted in public with a sort of bravado, and it was imperative for him to document both what he remembered and what he saw on the street. The exhibition is titled Between Worlds. He was at many crossroads. He lived through many dualities, black, white, rural, urban, old and new. These pictures are about hard work in labor and construction, God and the devil, temptations, the city and the country folk, dog fighting, cock fighting, humans wearing yokes, and your next door neighbor, the town drunk, and everyday life on the street. You know, I used the word document earlier. That isn't quite right, because I don't see these as historical or explanatory or documentary. I see them as emotional expressions of his life, which he could have expected to be the common shared experience of his people. Sheila, what do you think he was expressing?
Well, so what is it? Each of us has within us some innate need to feel that our lives have significance. Here was this old African-American man who was illiterate, who'd experienced so much. He'd seen his world change, and he needed to tell it, to make a record of his life. So he developed a visual language that communicates so much more than words ever could. How can he say, a man being chased onto the roof by a dog? And yet the precariousness, the fear, the crazed dog, the little kids are so much more eloquently communicated in his drawings than in those flat words. Trailer never learned to read, but in fact, he had many pictures of people reading or writing, holding up a board with a few letters. It seemed he had a great need to spill out his memories, his traumas, his pleasures of the past, and all that he was seeing on the streets of Montgomery. They're sometimes really funny and sometimes filled with fear. His life ultimately spans slavery, Reconstruction, Jim Crow, and the Great Migration, which led most of his children away from the South. Trailer's generation had little and struggled greatly, yet they stood together and persisted and laid the groundwork for the coming era of civil rights. Trailer professed profound social and political change. He was raised by parents who had lived their lives as slaves. Trailer came of age with the first generation of African-American citizens, a radically changing culture in which black people had their own businesses, their schools, churches, clothing and hairstyles, music, food, and more.
So he picked up a piece of cardboard and painted it.
Why? Bill Trailer picked up a pencil and a stick for a straight edge and began to draw on a scrap of cardboard at the age 85 is a mystery. There's no hint of any knowledge of art or art making in his background. What we do know is that from the spring of 1939 until the summer of 1942, Traylor worked seemingly all day, every day as an artist. In these 3 years, he created this remarkable body of work, approximately 1,800 drawings. They reveal the world of his unique memories and what I'd call his unique gift for noticing and for recording, because he had to. It was too rich not to put it down. So we have the wonder of this record from a man who grew up in rural Alabama, moved to the bright lights of Montgomery, and then left it for us. Charles Shannon, his friend, arranged an exhibit called Bill Traylor, People's Artist, and it included 100 of Traylor's drawings. And even though there are many reviews in local newspapers, not one drawing was sold. Still, it was notable that the only exhibit of his work that Traylor would live to see, that was it. And later, in 1942, at the Fieldston School in Riverdale, New York, they had a show called Bill Traylor, American Primitive. But not one museum bought his work. Alfred Barr, who was the director of the Museum of Modern Art in New York, offered to purchase several drawings for the museum's collection, but he only offered $1 or $2 for each piece, and the deal fell through good. At first, Traylor was categorized as a primitive or outsider artist, but now he's considered a self-taught artist. That's more accurate. I'm not sure how they draw these lines, but Traylor had no formal schooling, but his work has the amazing formal qualities of shape, composition, negative shape. At the Smithsonian American Art Museum, there's the largest exhibit of his work, and many of his drawings were lost on the streets.
You and Tom have often talked about an artist's visual language on this program. Bill Traylor has a strong and distinct visual language that he worked out. It is direct and abstracted, clear, concise, and simplified. The simple execution with simple media, whether he is portraying people, animals, or buildings. To speak analytically of the iconography, if that's not too fancy.
It's too fancy. Go ahead.
The iconography. There is no interest in forms and shadows in the traditional illusionistic sense. Human and animal subjects and narratives are seen in a lateral view. I wish Tom were here to comment on my observation. I saw a strong resemblance in the faces, that is, in the eyes, to the people pictured on ancient Greek vases. There's no sense of real space. The characters do not have accurate relative sizes. The primitive nature of this can be seen in many art forms, from indigenous art of the Americas to the ancient Mycenaean Greek art, Minoan art, and Middle Eastern art. Traylor creates wondrous shapes and spaces. His work in pencil, poster paint, and ink are done simply, but we're fascinated. What about this simple media? He uses poster paint just like you once did, Sheila.
Oh, God, I remember when my father would give me his shirt cardboards. I could feel the excitement of what I was going to do with them. And temper paints. Temper paints are water-based. They're cheap. They're bright. They came way before for acrylics. And Traylor did have a lovely way with color. He used lots of blue and brown and white. But when you see a yellow or a pale green, you just love it even more. So a question in my mind, how did this come into being? He responded to his own images, and he developed them through many drawings until he found the perfect form. Sometimes you could see his working out a form, especially for an animal. And where did his sense of abstraction come from? His objects, pipes, hats, jugs, oil lamps, animals, ladies with their pocketbooks and their little heel shoes. Everything has a special attention to shape. And then the negative shapes. Take a look at the pictures on our Facebook page. Negative shapes of chairs, of people and activities, people putting their arms together, and clearly the shape that's made in between. And see how this part of the organization is part of the compositions. There are some drawings where you can see that he was learning how to simplify, but not too much. It seems they mostly just came out of his mind and poured out onto the paper. There's something of a child in this, a child with the ability to communicate emotion, which is like no child I've ever seen. And I wonder if Charles Shannon, who was an artist, helped him in the concept of shapes. But the idea of abstraction is not something you can teach an old man, the simplification of forms. And he can show movement, dogs fighting, a cart being pulled by a goat. Well, we see it similarly in cave paintings. They're not only like cave paintings, but like Picasso and Calder, and then most recently Kara Walker, who we've talked about on this show, who used silhouettes as her part of her art form. There's a terrific painting, a self-portrait of the artist painting, and around him are all the things, snakes, chickens, birds, dogs, hatchets, they're flying all around him. And it's like all these art objects are going to land on the paper that he's painting. And all of the little kids flying off roofs. Well, I'm pretty sure Bill Traylor didn't study Picasso or cave paintings, but what about Kara Walker? Was she looking at Bill Traylor?
Right, he didn't study Picasso, but he discovered a way of fashioning a work of art that communicates complex emotional moments in life. These people are not living in our real world, our terra firma. They are reenacting incidents in a cosmos, a parallel world where gravity is not like it is here. They're like mythological creatures living his life in another realm. The exhibition is divided into various themes that he addressed in his life. He lived a long life and saw lots of things. The exhibition titled some of these is Urban Folk, Mortal Peril, Drinkers and Dancers, Memories and Mysteries, Balancing Acts and Precipitous Events, and individual works titled Exciting Events and a Whole Lot of Animals. You enter the exhibit with three works that basically begin to share the language that Traylor uses. Then there is this blue bird, a painting with blue poster paint on a piece of discarded paper. Wow, it does not get better than that. Pure, raw, powerful expression. This kind of expression harks on the immediate connectedness between brain and hand that is simply an art moment.
Yeah, when I saw that bird, I immediately thought of the Brock Bluebird that the Phillips Collection uses as its logo, and how this is so different because the bird is so alive. It's not, it's simple, but it has motion. And the surprising thing, I think, is how good these things are. They're so damn expressive and also so full of life. There's drinking, there's fighting, there's arguing, animals chasing each other in fury. They're not realistic. There are a lot of demons, lots of things flying around and pointing, which is an emotional gesture. You know they're relating to each other. There's a number of complex animated scenes. The demons and spirits swirl in space. Multiple figures surround house constructions. Sometimes a random mark or a smudge will be included, or the odd shape of a scrap of cardboard would challenge his compositional inventiveness. The memory of rural life, the people contained in these houses on the roofs, spilling out or climbing. There's way too much activity in too small spaces. But then on the street, his drawings of life in Montgomery, his people come shining out, full of style and dance. These images are making a transition that the European artists made through their influence of Japanese art. The eloquence of these shapes of bodies, the shoes, the patterns of clothing, the expression of dance, this is really so remarkable because you see him trying to figure out how to draw when he was 85, but it's uncanny how much he has learned or intuited from what. That's what I'm trying to put my finger on. His own development led him from his old direction under the influence of jazz, dance, to seemingly the same place that Matisse was looking for in his cut papers, particularly of his Matisse's jazz series, which Matisse was making at exactly the same time, the same years. And that is really incredible. And the pointing people in top hats, they seem to be remembered from an earlier age when Traylor was living in the country. But when he became part of Montgomery's scene, his people could just walk into a Matisse cut paper party and be welcomed. And let's mention Calder, because of his Josephine Baker. She would be at the party too. Also, his comic expression with scale, his animals, the way Calder's giraffe would be massively bigger than the elephant. And he did this too. And Seurat, in his lovely Conti crayon drawings, they have the same attention to shape, the same spareness, the way Traylor did in the drinking bottle, the top hat, the umbrella, and the round bottoms of the men. It's so much like Seurat, except Seurat wasn't funny. Traylor always had a sense of humor along with his sense of craziness. And it's crazy to think about what was in him that he was driven to do these things. And then there are also very much the lines of cave paintings.
I think one of the lessons I take away from this show concerns that uncanny continuity with cave art, Greek art, medieval art, modern art. I recalled and have looked up this passage from Proust. Quote, "In fashioning a work of art, we are by no means free, that we do not choose how we shall make it, but it pre-exists, and therefore we are obliged, since it is both necessary and hidden, to do what we should have to do if it were a law of nature, that is to say, discover it." Traylor discovered his people and animals, and they developed. They fly around, land, point, drink, and parade before us, and we see into their lives.
This work by Bill Traylor is about pure energy transfer of a visual artist. This kind of expressive sharing is what we at WOWDLP Tacoma Park value. We have a group of volunteers sharing their passion and expertise about music, the community, and the world. If you came to one of our staff meetings and looked over the landscape and saw the variety and the energy that is here at WOWDY, you would be blown away. You are part of just that, our mission. A way of your sharing your commitment to all of us is to be a part of the financial collectiveness that enables this radio station to continue to share with you. Go to our website at tacomaradio.org and press donate. And help us bring the best to you. It takes energy and money. We thank you for this contribution. So let's listen up to music that Bill Traylor would have listened to about the times he lived in.
Me and my baby walking down the street, meeting everybody but the chief police. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. We were shooting dice, money on the floor. I come the law and knocked on the door. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. Money on the floor, up come the law and knocked on the door. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. Thank you.
baby walking down the street, meeting everybody but the chief police. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go. Shooting dice, money on the floor. Up come the law and knock on the door. You gotta step it up and go. Yeah, go. Well, you can't stand still, I swear. You gotta step it up and go.
Hi, this is Gary Bartz. You're tuned to 94.3 FM, WOWD Tacoma Radio, the home of wonderful music.
Welcome back. You're listening to WOWD Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM.
In this exhibit of Bill Traylor, there's a series of drawings of simple objects on small pieces of paper. You studied them carefully. The cedar trees from 1939, the lamp, an abstract table from that same time, and another one with a bucket and ball. Just some simple shapes stacked on each other, and one painting of a simple jug. You seemed really impressed by the simplicity of these abstractions.
Yes, I would like to say that when you first approach this exhibit, it's first of all, the lighting is kind of low. There's no obvious hype or color. The drawings on the wall are simple, and you could be deceived to think that they are just little things to look at, you know, and just walk on by. And then the more you look and the more questions you ask, which we're trying to bring up some of these questions in doing this show, you get to be just fascinated by this world. When Tom and I were at the exhibit, Sean Scully, a very famous painter who Tom and I have talked about in another show, happened to be at this exhibit with his friend, and they were really up close. You can always tell when artists are looking at work because they go right up to the drawings and the guards get really upset, and they're pointing out small things in the work. So there's something about these drawings is that there's no attachment to gravity. Traylor seems fascinated by balance. He often have things, symmetry, flying, falling. He'll make like a balancing thing. And it seems that he could set everything free. When Tom talked about risk, I think the most obvious risk is Traylor's need not to say too much about what has now become revealed and so present and oppressive in our learning of those times. The horrific violence, especially the lynchings. There are a couple of drawings that depict lynchings, but they're almost disappearing. They're so understated, small pencil drawings. Like he had to say it, but he didn't want to say it loud. They don't depict the violence, the hatred, or suffering that they were in reality. The danger of depicting that is present in their absence.
Yes. Several of these works, titled Exciting Events, are by far the most complex. They are moments in time, snapshots of what just happened before our artist's eyes. We witness dogs witnessing human events and humans witnessing them as well. Lots of stuff is going on. A sense of playful chaos everywhere. Lots of action and acrobatics here. Human tumbling, people flying in space, losing hats, holding onto umbrellas, dogs barking, cats howling, and moving around some totemic figure that at times looks like an anvil or a machinery form of a factory. Additionally, the center of the imagery seems to be weighted by a tree form or a bush. It's where the center of the action is going on. The relationship between people, cats, dogs, and birds, and bugs, not to mention snakes, is astounding and outstanding. Although most of the works seem to depict exteriors, there are a few interesting interiors of domestic situations, which are intense spaces of bottled up visual energy. What did you think about those drawings with the violence associated with cockfights and dogfighting?
Oh, my God. Well, the dogs all have their teeth bared. They're raging, and they're chasing people up on the roof. No wonder little kids are afraid of dogs. And the cockfighting. When I lived in North Carolina, somebody took me to a cockfight. It's a whole subculture, and it probably still exists, even though it's illegal. And dog fighting, there was a NFL player who was accused of dog fighting now. I mean, very recently. And those cocks in North Carolina, they were bred for fighting. And they would be set up, and they had little, these sort of metal, like, knives on their feet, and they would be, you know, and they would be set up in a ring so that they could kill each other, and everybody would sit around and cheer and bet and stuff.
It was a whole subculture.
Yeah, it was. In fact, somebody used this word at the cockfight, featherwise. It's sort of like, like, well, featherwise.
Well, there are lots of animals showing their teeth in this exhibition. Cats, dogs of the rabid sort. Street dogs like the one Tom used to brave in Brooklyn. Scary critters, really. There are lots of these drawings, but a mean, blackish dog, the one on the red ground, the only one painted in a red field. Man, was that one mean. A few were docile, but most of them were tough. The interpositioning of these canines fighting conjured up illusions of race relations among dogs and certainly humans. Yellow Chicken, owned by the Museum of Modern Art, is an incredible masterpiece. Yes, a masterwork. This yellow chicken is parading around, boldly flapping its feathers. This drawing makes Sesame Street's Big Bird look like a canary. Raw power in a work. His depiction of rabbits and hares are fantastic. This one blue rabbit in the exhibition is another winner in the depiction of animals. There are a few good owls as well. And what about those drunks and the temptations and the chase scenes?
Yeah, the man being chased by a dog or a woman being chased by her man and arguing. Bill Traylor was married a few times. He had 20 odd children, he said. And he said that whiskey took away any good sense he had. So the drunks, the temptations, and the chase scenes, they were his.
These works express an attitude of, it is what it is. There's not much sense of a nostalgia or love. Well, maybe love. It's drama. The depiction of drinkers and drunks is amazing. The way he bends the figures unnaturally, as if they had been made rubber by the moonshine, suddenly curvilinear on the ground and drunk, rubberized and out of it. The humanity of temptation and the use of snakes are wonderful. The menacing serpents, the chase, and the space between these active figures.
You know, I think that this show really ought to be seen as Bill Traylor's past life in his rural life, and then the difference when he came to Montgomery and how he needed at his age to be in the big city. And at that point, the figures changed, not just the images, but the way he painted things. He developed much more style, because that's what he was looking at and that's what he was part of. And there's a picture in the show of Bill Traylor, a couple of pictures we put on Facebook of him when he's sitting at his little table. But he's on exhibit two. He wants to be part of things. He's not just an observer, he's a participant. And once you really see that, once you understand that, these drawings really come alive. This is kind of a weird show, and putting a label on Trailer, I don't understand these labels because they keep changing. He was called primitive, a folk artist, a visionary artist, and self-taught, which is the new term. And it's probably the most accurate. In the video, the curator calls him one of the most important artists of the 20th century. I think this is so silly. I think it really betrays what this artist was about. He wasn't trying to further art in the way that we think of 20th century artists. We think of these artists, as I've said before, sort of in a parade, trying to further art. He wasn't doing that. So it's a little bit overblown. I think we need to discover for ourselves why this work is so meaningful. And I have to say, in doing the show, in seeing the show, and then looking more and more and thinking more and more about the work, I just love it. It's a wide open window into the artist's mind at a very pivotal time in history. And looking back into the life on the plantation, it's not the pick a bale of cotton cliche, you know, pawpaw patch, but life at home with too many people, there are too many animals, there's too much drinking, there's too much fighting. This person, Bill Trailer, who had already lived a long life, extended it into making it important. And when he decided to produce drawings, he did it in a frenzy of work. It was about 3 years. I think the museum did a good job of keeping it simple. At least they didn't put the drawings in carved gold frames. But even so, it's a lot to look at and digest. So to me, these drawings are really one work. And when you see them as one work, that's when they start flying around from his imagination to yours. It's one terrific work.
Right. That distinction you drew about some artists working to advance the art, I think is one of the elements when we say great artists and minor artists. Of course, all minor artists are geniuses also, but the great artists are certainly trying to overwhelm and master the people they grew up looking at. And so the exhibition of a minor artist, without saying that it's not that, with that connotation of lesser. And so that's the difficulty of making this distinction. But all he had something original to show us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he's so important.
Yes, yes. And I think that this is something that a lot of artists struggle with. Peter, you and I, we just saw this this movie. It's called The Price of Everything, and it's about the art market in New York. Now, this has nothing to do with Bill Trailer. It is the explosion of money. And I guess people know about this, but boy, it is really something. Making artists into stars so that they can keep raising the prices. There was, you know, and then flip those paintings to raise the prices some more. And in the beginning, the artists didn't get anything from that. But now, the more that this is done, the artists can command these enormous prices for their art. And what does it have to do with making art anyway? I mean, Bill Trailer was one guy sitting at a table, and he was pouring his heart and his mind out. And that in itself is such a beautiful thing. And so, but these artists are in another category. And boy, it is really discouraging. And I think it's discouraging to many, many artists who have a need to express themselves, and that is their purpose in life, is to show something to the world, what's inside them. And maybe there's not even a world to see it, but they need to see it themselves. They need to discover what is inside and bring it outside. And so when you talk about Bill Traylor as being one of the important artists of the 20th century, he is really important. But he's not important from the point of view of making more sophisticated art or expanding your mind or commanding enormous prices.
Right. He could expand your mind, but he was not part of that, of the history.
Right.
So Tom sent me his closing comments, and I'll just read them to you. I keep going back to the title of this program, and the words that I use to describe the show are honest risk. The artist's work expresses and powerfully reveals one man's record of the African-American experience coming out of slavery. As the exhibition mentions, this documentation of the events he saw before his eyes is truly about the evolution of a nation from one man's point of view. Bill Traylor is an art martyr in the most sacred and secular and beautiful sense. He recorded the tales, the memories, and the experiences he witnessed in a simple and abstracted way. It took risk, honesty, and personal power. This artist's naivete is his power. That naivete is meant in the noblest of ways. In some ways, I wish contemporary art were made in this way. Somehow, we have lost the purity of spirit. Our lives are diluted and polluted by things and more things, special codes, passwords, accounts, and dreams and fantasies that accompany them. We have lost our way.
Well, between worlds, the art of Bill Traylor at the Smithsonian American Museum of Art on 8th and F Streets Northwest is free and open to the public and very metro accessible. This exhibition goes until March 17th, 2019. This exhibition is beautiful, and it has power that goes way beyond looking. The work is deceptively simple, but what we take away from it is powerful because it is the true experience of one man. Questions are being answered that we wouldn't even know how to ask. Thank you so much, and we hope you enjoyed this show.
Okay, do you want to tell our listeners about some upcoming shows?
Sure. Well, Tom and I will be putting a series of shows together about the development of an artist and how a visual artist views their success from the beginnings of their art career to the mid-career artist until their late and hopefully productive life in advancing age. This is a very big topic, and we hope to tackle it soon with a series of three shows on how the visual artist sees success.
The series of shows will be full of confessions and sticky subjects about the kind of success that are available to an artist in this world.
And experience art and the visual in everything you do. Thanks for listening, and see you in 2 weeks.
If you don't believe it, the way red hair and face. Well, the man, my baby, walking down that avenue. Well, the man, my baby, walking down that avenue. Pretty mama, can't Sonny walk home with you? She said, yeah, Sonny, we'll rock that house tonight. She said, yeah, Sonny, we'll rock that house tonight. You gotta give me plenty of love and everything really be all right. Hooray, hooray, this woman is killing me. Hooray, hooray, this woman is killing me. If you don't believe it, the way red hair and see. Yes, yes. Baby, 5 o'clock.
o'clock now, what you wanna do? Baby, 5 o'clock now, what you wanna do? See, that's funny, I don't care at 8, I leave it up to you. I got mad, I said, babe, I don't like that, my lock this old door. I'm gonna lock this door and throw this key away. I'm gonna lock this door and throw this key away. Baby, I ain't going home, I'll stay right here all day. Yes, yes, I am. Hooray, baby, the women is killing me.
When it's hard trying to see anything, where you go, hard time will drive you from door to people are drifting from door to door, but they can't find no heaven. I don't care where they go.
Cold wind blows. in the pond while the sun never shine, I will shiver all night too. Black girl, don't lie to me. Tell me, where did you sleep last night? In the pond, where the sun never shines, I will shiver all night too. My husband was a railroad man, killed a mile and a half from here. His head was found in a driver's wheel, and his body haven't been found. Black girl, where will you go? I'm gone where the cold wind blows. You called me to weep, and you called me to moan. You called me to leave my home.